Are you a big brain of the beautiful game? Prove it with the great new app that'll test your football knowledge to the limit. Name That Player. Download the Name That Player app today and race against the clock to identify the Premier League players purely from a list of the clubs they've played for. Put your football knowledge to the ultimate test with the Name That Player app. Available right now for iOS and Android from the App Store and Google Play. Name That Player. Can you beat the best?
Shoot the defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
Especially being a club legend, it's just totally disrespectful. And like I say, it's just a lack of respect, lack of class, and I hope we get relegated and liquidated.
Jan, do you want to do that voice of your barber so we can guess which nationality he is?
Are you ready?
Sounds like a really bad porno, mate.
And the fact that we had now taken our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable. And with very young players, so it was...
Yeah, but I've seen misses, like...
But that wasn't a miss.
Misses, he stopped his mate from scoring it.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Del, and I've got three co-hosts with me tonight. My first one is none other than Rodri Giggs. Welcome back, my friend.
Yeah, you right, Paul?
Yeah, good, good. Has the adrenaline worn off?
Adrenaline? I'm just dozing off.
I was going to say, it's such a pulsating game.
Yeah, yeah. Jesus, some Prozac for that one.
Well, I think some of our players need preparation H, but I'm not going to go into that. There you go. Right. Second co-host, Double D from the D&D 40 Factory. Welcome back, my friend.
You're all right, guys. I'm all right. Good to be back.
Have you got a packet of crisps there and you haven't offered any?
No, I've got a bag. I was shredding before, so I was shredding. I've got a bag of old letters and whatnot to shred. And it's right next to me.
He wanted
to say a few words to shoot to the face.
It's not the Bobby Duncan transcript between the agent and Carragher, is it? No? Okay. the lost files. Great stuff. And the returning guest, Adrian Kajumba. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, Al. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me again.
No, great to have you back on, mate. How's life? Are you at Daily Mail now, yeah?
Yeah, Daily Mail now, yep. It's all going well, thank you. Especially they've got a couple of days off, so it's very good these couple of days at the moment.
Yeah, feet up, going to the gym, all that kind of stuff, yeah?
Yeah, watching Man United, great fun.
Christ. Well, I'm glad you mentioned United. Let's crack on with that one, shall we? Because as everyone's probably aware now, United have drawn 1-1 with Arsenal. Game finished, 15-20 minutes ago. United took the lead through Scott McTominay, and then Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scored his only opportunity. VAR gave the goal, even though I don't know why the linesman flagged offside, because Maguire had him about 10 yards on. Rod, let's start with you, mate, because we were messaging each other throughout the first half. To be fair, I was telling Aid before we started recording, we were comfortable up until the equaliser. Are you surprised how we capitulated with that one incident?
Yes and no. Yes, because... You know, it's still a young side, even though we've got a sprinkle of experience there. It's still a young side, and goals can change games. And obviously, it changed the way the game was going and brought Arsenal back into it. Yeah, United got back into it and light scoring. And Arsenal didn't really look like scoring, although they did look dangerous last in the injury time. But yeah, it was a game really that we should be winning.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, on the balance of play up until they equalised, I thought we were in total control. They hardly threatened us. I think only De Gea had one save to make, which was in the first half, and then there was that Guendouzi effort, which he put wide. So it's quite disappointing. But Dan, I'm not going to shit all over United tonight because I'm really too tired to do that. I'll let Adrian do that. Arsenal, I put out a tweet prior to McTominay's goal saying that Guendouzi was teaching you how to be a central midfielder. And obviously, as luck would have it, McTominay scored and everyone was getting on my back. But he was by far the best player on the pitch, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a really good player, Guendouzi. He's got a head of a player far beyond his years. comfortable on the ball, can receive it on the half turn. He's got a bit of tenacity about him as well. Can dribble a bit. He's a good player, man. And he looked. It was a game that lacked a lot of quality, but he was one of the few players that did some bits and pieces that not necessarily brought you out of your seat, but it's like, oh, that was. It was nice. It was easy on the eye. Let's say that compared to the game, it looked like a League One game at times. Certain players on the pitch were just missing. Pogba didn't do much. Torreira didn't do much. There was a few players who weren't behind their ball, but Guendouzi looked good, did a good job. But I think the draw was probably the fair result in the end. I don't think either of them did anything too, as you said, United looked good. Then they kind of tailed off. But neither team really looked. There was a couple of good saves by both goalkeepers, but I didn't think either team really did enough in the end. I think a draw was fair.
Yeah. And Rod, let's go back to McTominay's goal, because it seemed to be a catalogue of errors from both teams, really, because there was the ball in the box which didn't reach Rashford. He then recycled it, played it to Pogba. He didn't get on the end of it. McTominay took a lovely touch and put it in the top corner. Great finish. But what was Granit Xhaka doing? I mean, the other week he was saying that Arsenal was scared against Watford. I mean, he was scared for the ball, wasn't he? He ducked.
Yeah, well, just reading a lot of girls, aren't it? We've seen it. If you watch I seen it the other day. Which one was it? It was Jack Grealish on the end of the wall, and he was jumping out of the way of it, and they scored late on. I can't remember which game it was, but yeah, I've seen it a lot this season. The players jumping out the way of the ball. It's a piece of leather. It won't hurt you. It won't kill you. Mm. It's the wall's supposed to be a wall, not a crumbling wall.
Yeah, it was. I wouldn't say Xhaka was.
Listen,
like
if it. if we did that back then, when I used to play football back in the day when we was kids, when we was YTS, if we moved in the this is legit. This if we moved in the wall or stuff like that between ourselves, you got 1 minute in a dark boot room, and that was a written rule between the YTS. That was there before I even got there. But you say, yeah, you move out the way of the wall. And you're getting a minute in the dark boot room, and it hurts because you have studs in them boot rooms.
Yeah, well, Xhaka wasn't a Swiss Alp kind of mountain, was he? It was more like a Toblerone. But
well, he just seemed to like duck underneath it, just stand tall. If you take one to the chin, you take one to the chin. He looks like a sufferer, but you know, it's all prosthetic, obviously.
I wonder which.
There's a meme. No, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was about to say, I wonder which Usher song we can compare Xhaka to this time, because I reeled off a list the other week. I can't think of which one he is this time, but anyway. Sorry, you're saying, Dan.
No, I was just going to say that there's a meme going around already of Xhaka doing the Matrix on the goal. As you said, you're meant to block the ball. He's just moved it out. I have no words for that guy. And then he's booking towards the end of the game as well. What the hell was that? What type of challenge was that?
Well, I'll tell you my friend Karen had 20 quid, right, on Aubameyang to score and Xhaka to get booked. And I think he ended up winning like 670 quid. So hats off to the guy, because he did very well with that one. But Aid, let's talk about United quickly, because Pereira was pretty bang average. I was quite disappointed that Daniel James didn't get to attack Callum Chambers too much, because he obviously was a bit of a weak link there. Rashford again, piss poor. And defensively, you know, having a right-footed central defender at left-back, Ashley Young at right-back. I think we kind of got away with it, didn't we?
Got away with it. Yes, in some ways, because I must admit, going into this game, I did think United were going to lose. I just think they're in that sort of position at the moment. I thought there's a lot of negativity, a lot of uncertainty around the team, some of the players, fitness issues. Just seems to be a bit of a kind of cloud hanging over the club at the moment. I suppose when you look at things like that, you know, individual poor performances, players playing out of position, yes, but it was a game that was there for the taking, really, and it's a bit of a missed opportunity. And I think one of the biggest disappointments is, again, it's another Man United game that comes to an end, and you don't even feel like they've really gone for it. You just feel like a little bit flat. They've not even really tried to win. I was saying to you before we started recording, you know, you remember when Man United were trying to chase a game in years gone by. You'd actually come to the end of the game and even if the result hasn't gone their way, there's still a sense of, oh, at least they were trying, you know, at least they tried. You could see that there was an attempt to win the game. I don't get that at the moment when I watch Man United games. It's almost like the whistle comes and they just seem a little bit limp, a little bit half-hearted with their attempts to win games at the moment. So maybe got away, of it in some ways because of, as you know, some of those things you mentioned at the start. But I don't really feel like there was a genuine concerted effort to win that game tonight. So missed opportunity for me.
Yeah. And what about Marcus Rashford? Because again, I put out a tweet earlier saying, you know, the lad has had so many opportunities in terms of, you know, goal scoring opportunities the past three or four games. Aubameyang only has one today and he puts it away. I mean, I think that's a fundamental difference between a quality striker and a bang average one.
Well, I mean, for one, Rashford's not a striker. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the worrying things is when he says it himself, you know, you've got Solskjaer almost wanting to push him into this kind of, you know, Man United's main striker and will share the duties with Martial. And you've got Rashford coming out and saying, I've never grown up wanting to be a number nine, wanting to be an out-and-out goal scorer. I wanted to be that all-round attacker. And, you know, that should be sort of alarming in some ways for Solskjaer, given what he's trying to do and what Rashford wants to be. There were times today, I mean, at the moment, because of Martial's injury, he is the main striker. So regardless of what he wants to be, he has to be that threat through the middle in the box. There were times he was the one picking up the ball in the right-hand side channel, and coming deep and trying to create things, and then when he's looking out to put the ball in the box, there's nobody there. It's a real issue at the moment because you don't know what Rashford is, what he wants to be, what he's really good at, what his strengths are. It's going to be an issue for him internationally as well, because if he, you know, you struggle to see what he's going to get in the England side as well. And long term, it's going to be a problem for Man United because he's on a massive contract now for the next 4 or 5 years. And when you look at it, you think, if you look at playing Rashford down the flanks, Man United can do better than Rashford down the flanks. If you're looking at playing Rashford through the centre, they either have a better option in Martial, or they can buy a better option in the transfer market. So what are you going to do with Marcus Rashford in the years to come, both Man United and England?
Yeah. The thing is, under Mourinho, he was played wide left and he was encouraged to come inside. And I think that's probably his best position, because when he's playing off the shoulder, he doesn't do much. He doesn't do much at all. And obviously, he's carrying a bit of a niggle. I know that. And I know that he's low in confidence. So, yeah, shitting on him isn't a nice thing to do. But let's be 100% honest. He hasn't done enough as a centre forward. I've always said, if he's going to play up top as a central striker, and Rod, tell me if I'm wrong with this, surely he's better off with an additional guy, you know, a second striker with him. But that would mean we'd have to change our system to a 4-4-2. So, I don't know.
Who's this, Rashford?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to just, sometimes I feel sorry for him because, you know, he started as a forward and now he's been put on the right, he's been put on the left. For England, he's played number 10 and looked good. So, you know, to me, I don't think he's 100%. And when you're not 100%, It doesn't look right. You know, he pulled up last week with a groin, and the next minute he's fit. So he's always, I know you play a season and you're always going to play with niggling injuries, but these injuries are obviously too affecting his game too much. I don't know, but yeah, he's obviously low in confidence because there was a time when he went through and he just put it out of his feet and just hit it with your left foot and he's just took too long and the defenders got back. He's obviously lacking confidence and, you know, obviously the teammates around him are not top class and not quality to help him out. You know, he's always going to struggle. But, yeah, if they're going to bring better players in, you know, if Sancho comes in for, say, like next year, or if he comes in and he'll play in front of Rashford, you'd rather him play and James on the other, the way the two are playing at the minute. So, yeah, he's got to play better. He's got to sort it out. He's got to sort it out quick because, you know, people are running out of patience with him. You say he's young, but, you know, people are still saying that about Lingard. He's fucking 26.
Yeah, true. Dee, before we move on to the other games, quick thing. Saka, Arsenal, he had an outstanding game, I think. And there's a stark contrast between him and Pepe. Pepe came in with a big transfer fee, really hasn't done enough, in my opinion. Tonight, he looked anonymous. What's happening with these two players? Because obviously you've got one that's come through the ranks that seems to be imposing himself more on games, whereas you've got this one that's come with a big fee who I think will come good, but he still needs time. And obviously, social media doesn't allow people to have time.
There you go. That's exactly it. The demands of the modern day fan are completely different because they think they're managers now because of social media. I should have actually mentioned Saka before when I was giving props to Guendouzi, because Saka looked lively in the first half. He looked like the only way that Arsenal would be able to get a goal, to be perfectly honest. Fearless, willing to try things. And at the end of the day, he stood out. Even Greenwood for United, he came on, and some of his link-up play, he looked like he was willing to try something. Like, if he'd been given 10 to 20 more minutes on the pitch, he could have done something. But I've liked Saka. I've spoken about Saka on our show from last season. I saw him in one or two Europa League games. I just like the way that he tried to go at players direct. Always busy. He's not static. So I've liked the look of him. He's done well. I didn't think Reece Nelson did anything wrong against Newcastle in the opening day of the season, but Saka's got ahead of him, and I don't think, unless Emery decides to, because it's hard to guess what he's going to do at certain times, I don't believe that he'll be coming out of the side anytime soon, because he looks a good prospect, Saka. I like the look of him.
Well, I know Nelson had a little bit of an issue when he was on loan in Germany at Hoffenheim. I think he was dropped from a few games because the manager wasn't happy with his behaviour off the pitch. I don't know whether he was getting into a bit of trouble or whether it's just his attitude wasn't right. I don't mean to sound like Souness here, but perhaps, you know, he's still learning Emery's way, and Emery feels that Saka is more of a direct player, because you can see a difference between the two.
Do you know what it is? I think that the key thing is, when you're these young players, the key thing is to take the chances. And that's what Saka's done.
Mm.
Gets thrown in for a start against Frankfurt, last Europa League a couple of weeks ago. He scores. He sets up two goals. That's all it is. When you get these little chances, you really have to grab them, make an impression. I just think, Arsenal got a few young sort of attacking players, so there's a lot of competition for those places. And I think that's what Saka's done. When he's got his opportunities, he's had an impact, and that's just earned him a little bit more trust, more and more, from Emery. When obviously there was a gap that's opened because Iwobi's gone, and obviously Pepe's come in one side, and then it's just on that other position. It's almost open for Nelson or Saka, so it's almost like whoever was going to make their impact, make their impression when they got their chances, was going to get a little run, and that's what Saka's managed to do. And he's obviously impressed again tonight.
Bright future ahead, that lad. Really think he's. Right, let's move on. Now, it wasn't a great weekend for goalkeepers, thanks to some right clangers from those who should really know better. Goalkeeping fuckery began at Saturday's lunchtime kickoff between Sheffield United and Liverpool, as Dean Henderson did a Taibbi, letting Wijnaldum shot squirm through his body, giving Klopp's men their seventh win on the bounce. Later on, Tottenham's 3-1 win against Southampton had two goalkeeping errors. Ndombele's opener for Spurs literally went through gun, whilst Hugo Lloris's attempted Cruyff turn ended up being an assist for Danny Ings' equaliser. Meanwhile, at Goodison, the curse of England goalkeepers continued as Jordan Pickford covered himself with shit, having failed to keep up Mahrez' free kick for City. And Newcastle keeper Dubravka topped off a miserable day for his side, being beaten at his near post by Jamie Vardy in Leicester's 5-0 win. Now, gents, can you guys excuse any of the goalkeepers for their mistakes? I know Pickford and Lloris have made quite a few high-profile mistakes in the past, while Gunn, Dubravka and Henderson are slowly falling into the trap as well.
I don't know if I can defend any of them. Maybe Gunn, possibly, because it went down the middle of the goal, which is poor, but it came at a bit of pace. Henderson, definitely not, though I'm damn glad that he did it, because I don't think there was any other way that we were going to score there. Hugo Lloris has got previous, because he did that same thing in the World Cup final, but luckily for him, France already had a nice lead there, so it didn't cost them. And Pickford, you know, I think I joined the Pickford already. He's only in the England side by default, because Jack Butland, actually watched Stoke Forest on Friday, and Jack Butland, another howler. They won't take a chance on the likes of Nick Pope. McCarthy was in the frame, but then obviously he's Southampton's number two now because of the aforementioned Angus Gunn. So I don't rate Jordan Pickford like that. I think he's an all right shot stopper, but they rant and rave about how good he is with his feet. But do you want a goalkeeper that's actually going to help you win, or someone that's just going to help to build up play but then concede goals when a shot comes at him? He should be saving that free kick. He come off the line and did some nonsense as well, and then he was laughing about it afterwards, and that proper ticked off Gary Neville. I was on the floor. Gary Neville was like, why is he laughing? Why is he laughing? He's not funny. You know, but yeah, I can't defend any of them really, though. Mm. Any of them, all poor.
Rod, can you defend Dee for that accent?
What was he trying to, what accent was it?
We were trying to do Gary Neville, but
yeah, it's a difficult one. I think he was more of an embarrassing laugh, and he's probably laughed at, tried to laugh it off with his defender mate, and his mate probably wasn't amused. So yeah, the Lloris one was embarrassing. He should just kick it away. Pickford one, he should deal with it. This thing's going to happen more and more if your manager tells you to play out the back and you want your keepers to play out, and you know, even though it's still a really bad mistake, Lloris is. It's going to happen all the time, because, like I said, they're going to want the keepers to play out more, especially with this new rule where you can play inside the box. So you're going to see more of it.
Mm. And Aid, wasn't it great in the 90s, because you had world-class goalkeepers all round, you had world-class defenders, world-class midfielders, world-class strikers. I'm looking at our current era, and I can only think of a handful of world-class goalkeepers, a handful of world-class defenders, a handful of world-class strikers. Okay, we're blessed with a lot of midfielders. But do you think the standard of goalkeeping has actually dropped?
It's an interesting question. To be honest, I'm one of those guys who loves to reminisce, but I end up sounding like a real old man. Really, in the 90s, when you look at some of the players, 90s, early 2000s, some of the players we had to watch, as you said, some of the goalkeepers, unbelievable. And some of the guys who are around these days are not really sort of fit to lace boots, wear gloves. You know, it's sad in some ways. But I mean, in terms of the goalkeepers now, you know, you talk about Pickford just then. I was just talking about Pickford. He's basically in the England team because of his distribution, because of his kicking. It's not because of how he keeps goal. Not because of his shot-stopping ability particularly, because he's one of those goalkeepers who I'm not a particular fan of. I don't think I've ever seen Jordan Pickford hold a shot, parrying and palming all over the place. Doesn't come off his line. I've never seen him come out and claim a corner. You know, he's not a dominant goalkeeper. So he's literally in the England team because of his distribution, because he fits the way that Gareth Southgate wants to play along those lines. And that's part of the problem in some ways. You know, they're talking about trying to compare goalkeepers that were playing in the 90s and early 2000s who when they're training, when they're learning the game, they're being learned how to keep goal, how to stop shots, how to dominate their box, how to command their defence. Nowadays, it's all about how you basically kick a football. So in some ways, you can't be surprised that the actual goalkeepers, and you can't be surprised you're seeing mistakes like Saturday. I mean, obviously, goalkeepers have made mistakes down the years, but they're being asked to do so much more, and ultimately in training they're going to be doing so many more things, trying to pick up and learn so many more skills, but the actual basics of the job are bound to, you know, the quality is bound to dip a little bit. I mean, in terms of the mistakes in the weekend, I've kind of told you what I think about Pickford. Lloris has always had an error in him, probably one in every 5-6 games he's got one. The Bravko and Gunn, that's probably just the level they are as goalkeepers. Gunn's made a few already since he's, you know, been Southampton's number one. Henderson's the interesting one because he's sort of young and up and coming. I've spoken to Dean Henderson a couple of times actually. He's one of the best players I've actually ever interviewed because he's got so much confidence. And he's the sort who will make a mistake like he did at the weekend and he'll be able to brush it off so quickly. He's got a real sort of strong mentality. Make the mistake, he'll hold his hands up and he'll go again, and I think that's quite important. That's quite an important attribute to have as a goalkeeper. So certainly won't let him down making a mistake on that. He won't be beating himself up about it.
Yeah, and I guess it's a learning curve. I remember when Watford first came up and we loaned Ben Foster out to him, and he made the most saves that season. I know they got relegated, so it's obvious reasons, but he learnt from that spell there. So I guess Henderson will learn at Sheffield United. But again, it's a very demanding league, and you know, people put goalkeepers under the microscope when they make one mistake, and I just hope that he bounces back from that.
Yeah, and the thing for Henderson is he wants to be Manchester United number one. He wants to be England number one. So he knows that both of those two roles, the scrutiny, the spotlight that comes with them, the sort of standards that are required. So this loan spell is going to be great for him because he's going to get a little taste of the spotlight because he's in the Premier League. He's on Match of the Day every week. He's going to be having games on Sky and BT where every element of his game and any mistake that he makes is going to be scrutinised to the finest detail. So this is... You know, he's very highly rated at Man United and within England set up, so this is all part of what is going to come for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dee, you said it earlier, so you took the words out of my mouth, but I doubt you care how Liverpool score goals. It was another heart-fought victory away from home. Did Sheffield United surprise you with how they played, though?
No, because I watched bits and pieces of them last season in the Championship because I was bemused how they were accumulating so many points. And they graph, Wilder used to play for them. He knows that he's not got abundance of flair within the squad, so they play three at the back, they work hard, their full-backs slash wing-backs bomb on, and they just made it really awkward for Liverpool. They actually thought that we might, I know that we barely lose anymore, but I actually thought that they might be able to nick a winner because I couldn't see where the goal was coming from. Our midfield, we get so much creativity from the wide areas, and the front three can make a lot of goals themselves that in games like it takes games like that for people to actually realise how badly Liverpool need the ball carrier to be fit in the midfield, Keita to be fit, but he's always injured. Ox has obviously been out long term, and Lallana's made a glass because he could do it perfectly. He embodies everything that Jurgen Klopp wants. He's got skill, receives the ball on the half turn, can beat a man, but he's always injured. He does all the intangible things. Lallana tracks back, puts tackles in, etc. But yeah, so I was just looking where it's going to come from. So he's taken a mistake by the keeper, but that's what can happen when you shoot from outside the box sometimes. Under Mourinho's first spell at Chelsea got a bag of goals like that, whether it be a Lampard, Joe Cole or whatever. If you've got to be in the lottery to win it. So Ginny's tried his luck from the edge of the box. Henderson spilled it and scored. But yeah, now the performance wasn't very good. Again, I think Joel Matip was excellent. Van Dijk still looks like his head is big from all the way that he's been gassed up in the last 12 months. Fullbacks tried but couldn't really do anything. But what I found weird was that Liverpool looked tired, but none of those players played midweek last week against MK Dons. It's really starting to worry me. I know a lot of the team played, obviously the Champions League final was 3 weeks after last season finished, and then a lot of them played European qualifiers and Nations League and whatnot, but they looked really leggy, and that concerned me a little bit. But and it's especially away from home, it's all about getting the 3 points. If we put in performance like that on Saturday though at home to Leicester, Liverpool will not be in Leicester.
Fair point. And Rod, we've been raving about Wijnaldum for a very long time, even when I was at Newcastle. He's chipped in with a lot of crucial goals since joining Liverpool. Does he get the credit he deserves?
Probably not, but probably if he does from Klopp, because he knows how important he is. You know, every player, every team needs a player like that. He's probably not going to play every week, but when he does play, he gives you 8, 9, 10 out a week. You know, like a Nicky Butt or Ray Parley. You need these players, and when he comes in, he doesn't let the team down. So, yeah, he's probably is underrated by people outside of Liverpool, but probably inside of Liverpool, not so much.
True. And hey, that's a good win for Spurs, especially with 10 men. Full credit to the players for silencing some of their critics and holding on to slender lead to take all 3 points.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a funny, start to the season really for Spurs. Obviously, when they stopped Palace 4-0, I think it was 4-0 at half time, everyone's thinking, oh, Palace, you know, Spurs are back, but then they blow the 2-goal lead at Olympiacos, and then they go 1-0, and they go a 1-goal lead against Leicester. They obviously lose at Colchester on penalties, and then they go down to 10 men against Southampton, and you're thinking, oh God, this is going to be another bad day for Spurs. There's been a lot of negativity around them. Pochettino, some of the things he's been saying sounded quite downbeat. Issues with sort of futures of some of their players, injuries, the form just hasn't been there. So to pull that result out ahead of another sort of really big game that they've got tomorrow night against Bayern Munich. It's a huge result for them. Just to try and settle things down, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And Rod, it sounds strange to say this, but it looks like Everton's game plan against City went down the toilet when Walcott went off injured. Now, had they not been for Ederson with two great saves from Mina, City could have left with Goodison with just a point instead of three. Do you think Everton will be disappointed they didn't get anything from the game?
Yeah, excuse me. I think they will be. I watched that game. I was really impressed with Everton, even though City did dominate parts of the game, but you know Everton did look dangerous, and probably on view of the game, probably disappointed they didn't come away with something. Yes, City finished stronger and ended up easily winners, but there was a part of that game where Everton had a few chances and it could have easily gone the other way. And yeah, I was very impressed with Everton and surprised that the results have been quite up and down since the season started.
That's right, and again, City susceptible at the back. Especially from set pieces. Mina could have had a couple. But again, it goes back to what I said about goalkeeping.
You can obviously see that they're obviously not as strong as they are last year. You can see that defensively. They're still not right. And teams do get at them, they're going to cause them problems. It's stopping the other end is the name of the issue.
Mm. The thing is with Everton, Rod, if they had a 20-goal striker, they'd be very dangerous, wouldn't they?
Yeah, definitely. If they had, say, they had Lukaku when he was on fire for them a few years ago, they would be a real, real threat because... No, the stats tell you they're the second best team with possession. So if they've got the ball the most, you've got more chance of scoring, especially if you've got a top strike up there.
Aid, why do you think it's going wrong at Everton at the moment? Because when you look at them going forward, Coleman's good getting forward as a fullback, same as Digne, who will chip in with goals, set pieces and whatnot. They've got a very creative midfield. But as I said before, that central striker role, they just can't get it right, can they?
It's really difficult. Look at United, you know, the top size. It's very difficult. I know they've got rid of one, but you know, if you want a top striker, you don't want his first touch to be a 10-yard pass. So that's what they probably moved him on. So yeah, it's difficult. Everyone's looking for a striker. Newcastle's struggling for goals. There's a lot of people struggling for goals, and you know, these top strikers now, especially the way people play with just one up front, they need to be strong, they need to be do both, hold the ball and score goals, and they're like rocking all shit. They're not hard to come by.
What do you reckon, Aid?
No, I was just going to say, I saw Everton at Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago, and you asked where it's going wrong for them, and that day they conceded three goals from three really bad defensive sort of errors. And, I think you've got Marco Silva sort of tearing his hair out at the end after the game. He saw the Nuggets at the end of his tether trying to work out how he was going to solve his defensive problems. You know, they've invested heavily right across the team, including their centre-back. It was Keane and Mina, I think, with the centre-back partnership that day against Bournemouth. I'm not sure how much Mina came in for, but obviously Keane was 25 on me. Can't remember Mina's fee. It's a lot of money, and they still just can't seem to get any kind of solidity at the back. So I think that's going to be their big issue. I mean, losing to Man City is no shame. I think pretty much everybody will this season, but they've got to try and get some sort of solidity at the back of Everton.
Yeah,
I think if you've got
losing Idriss Gueye, bigger blow than you might realise. You might have thought in the summer him to PSG, he did a lot of work in that midfield, getting around, snuffing out attacks, sensing danger. He's gone. And not being replaced, so that would be a big blow and a big sort of reason as well why they'll struggle to tighten up in the back as well.
Rod, you were saying?
No, I was just saying that it seems to like there's a lot of teams in the league that haven't got the players that they need. There's a lot of, like, with United, it's up front and midfield. With Arsenal, it's up front. With Newcastle, there's not many teams with complete squads. You know, I could probably name about four or five, and then the other teams are just scratching and for quality players to bring in to make the squad and make the team better. And like Everton, like Adrian was saying there, you know, Everton look decent, but they're leaking goals, and obviously David Silva's pulling his hair out because they're just not strong enough at the back. There's a lot of teams struggling for players and for quality players, and there's not many teams that you could say with complete squads like Leicester, City, Liverpool, I'd say West Ham, and you know, who else? There's not many.
Chelsea, but Chelsea are weak at the back and say with their problems. So, no, it's not as strong as you think, the Premier League.
Oh, you're right. I agree with that. And Dan, Rod mentioned Leicester. Can we read too much into their win against Newcastle? I know Rodgers is clearly building something there, but Steve Bruce's men were shambolic, mate.
Okay, I don't know. I didn't think he was the man for the job when he got the job. It's a big drop off going from a manager like Rafa Benitez, who's won everything at club level, to Steve Bruce, who hasn't won anything. But it was always going to be a hard job to get a manager of Rafa's pedigree, but I just didn't think it would work. But they were just edged out by Arsenal on the opening day. They got turned over by Norwich, but I thought, yeah, newly promoted team, that can happen to anyone. They won a game, I can't remember who they beat. They were decent against Liverpool despite going down 3-1. But yesterday was they were poor at home against Brighton. I know Brighton passed the ball a lot more under Graham Potter, but they were poor, didn't show anything in a home game. But yesterday was just a shambles. I just left the room once it got to 3-0 because I was thinking with them. No, I was thinking with they're having 10 men. Poor challenge by Hayden. I don't know what he was complaining about. It was a poor challenge. But they just didn't really have anything. Gatsu was trying a little bit. Wayward shots. Joe Linton is a unit, but I don't think he's got enough to justify them paying £40 million for him. There's real problems there. And though it was his boyhood club, etc., and I know as soon as they asked him if he wanted the job, he was willing to take it, etc. I don't know if Bruce is going to even last the whole season because it's a mess. Money has been given to spend. He's playing, well, he went 4 yesterday, but he'd been playing the same 5 at the back that Rafa had been doing. And bar the superb away win at Tottenham, they've not really shown anything. And it's a shame. I just feel sorry for the fans, man. To be perfectly honest, I just feel sorry for some of the fans because one day we'll find out properly. I know he wrote a little piece in The Athletic, but we'll find out properly what other issues happened behind the scenes when Rafa did leave. But Newcastle were a mess and as it stands, I can't see them staying up.
Mm. What do you make of Leicester, though?
Leicester look good. I saw an interesting stat earlier that since he started, came back to the Premier League to be their manager, they've earned the third highest amount of points in the Premier League since February. Only obviously Man City and Liverpool have got more points than they have. Liverpool first. Liverpool have earned one more point than Man City in that time. They've got some good attacking talent there. They were willing to let Damari Gray go to Palace, but Arsenal never came up with the Zaha cash for the Zaha money. But bar that, you've got Harvey Barnes there, not great at shooting, but does everything else really well. Albrighton came on and looked lively, crossed the ball for one of the goals yesterday. Eozy Perez is a bit comes out at the moment, but he's settling into a new team. He missed a couple of games through injury. Vardy's always going to get you goals. Ndidi murders the engine room. Pereira is one of the better right-backs in the Premier League. They've got some pieces. So Yonku looks okay. They've got some pieces there. And I don't think they will have enough. I still think an Arsenal or a Chelsea will get fourth place because I think once Spurs sort it out, they'll get third. But Leicester might be a decent shout for fifth, but we'll see. They play Liverpool on Saturday. That'll be an interesting game to see what they do there. But I still think, though, though they could have a shout of finishing higher, I still think they'll probably end up like seventh this season. And I think top four calls are way too early at the moment.
Fair enough. Aide, what's your take on Newcastle at the moment, mate? I think they're going down. They just seem absolutely devoid of ideas.
I must admit, I thought that they were going to go down as soon as Benitez went and Steve Bruce made his appointment. Such a big leap, a drop in quality, I should say. And also, when you lose a manager of Benitez's calibre, for whatever reason, surely you've got to go out and bring somebody in who's going to inspire the squad. I know the circumstances behind which Benitez left, which is obviously, you know, his contract had run down. So it wasn't like Newcastle lost him because they wanted to. But ultimately, you've got a vacancy to fill. Go out and show some ambition.
Mm.
Don't go and get Steve Bruce, who's managed here, there and everywhere, and he's got an okay managerial CV, but coming after Benitez, it's not going to inspire anyone. It's not going to inspire the players. It's not going to inspire the fans. And in terms of the players, I think now you're starting to see that with that performance yesterday. Yes, they're down to 10 men, but I think belief is draining out of those players from what I'm hearing today, sort of belief in the manager and his methods. So, you know, Dan's talking there about Steve Bruce not seeing out the season. You wonder if he might ever make it to Christmas, to be honest. So let's just see how that one goes. But I mean, I thought they turned the corner or given themselves a platform, whatever kind of cliche you want to use, when they beat Tottenham. But you know, they kind of haven't sort of kicked on from there really, and losing 5-0 yesterday. So that's a real hammer. I mean, they got Man United this weekend, so they'll probably win that the way Man United season's going. But I feared for Newcastle at the start of the season, and even more so now.
Well, I don't have any sympathy for him, but, you know, I'm not going to say anything else. Rod, Villa's draw against Burnley after being in front means they've now dropped 8 points from winning positions this season. Dean Smith said there isn't a mental block, but I'm not too sure about that, mate. What do you reckon?
Well, it's obviously an issue, and obviously you won't obviously say that publicly, but obviously you'll be working in it on the training ground or whatever by speaking to him. But yeah, it's obviously, you know, that can happen when you scored in the 79th minute and what they scored in the 81st. So it's obviously, they say that they're deceptive for a goal as soon as you've scored. So they've obviously switched off when they've scored and they've got a goal a couple of minutes later. So yeah, it's something that they need to sort out. But, you know, looking at the table, where are they, third from bottom? You know, I've seen a lot worse teams than Villa this year. I think they're, with what I've seen, I think they'll be okay.
Great stuff. Right, in other news, a FIFA panel today ordered Cardiff to pay £5.3 million to Nantes for Emiliano Sala. The Championship club argued they weren't liable to pay the £15 million fee as he wasn't officially their player when he died tragically in a plane crash. Gents, it would seem that a price has been put on this person's life. What are your views on the whole debacle? Adrian?
My view on this is just the kind of crude part of this obviously very tragic episode. I mean, goes without saying, I'm not even sure you can come up with a word to say sort of how sad and how tragic this all is. And it obviously really was sort of horrifying circumstances for everyone involved. But at the same time, there is a sort of business transaction that has happened that has to be dealt with. And it's got to a point now where the reason why this verdict has come out today is because there was a first instalment due. And, you know, the two clubs were arguing over who was going to pay for it. And obviously there was a deadline for that instalment to be paid, which is long gone. And that's why it's gone to this, particularly the panel hearing. And as I say, as crude as it is, as tasteless maybe some people might even say, this scenario is, you know, the two clubs arguing over it is a lot of money. And some way, somehow, there needs to be found a way, it needs to be worked out who's actually going to pay this money. So these kind of hearings are going to go on because they need to be had, and the two clubs are potentially passing blame for the paying of the money. You know, they're saying the other side is the one who has to pay it. So it's one of the sad realities with the situation that this has to be solved as well.
Yeah. Rod, obviously it's a business, and unfortunately, the player's passing is kind of swept under the carpet, literally. I don't know how they could have resolved this any other way, to be fair. What do you reckon?
I think it's just because it's such a big amount of money as well. It's a big liability for either club to just accept and say, we're going to pay. You know, maybe if you're talking small amounts of money, the two clubs might have been able to solve it privately, quietly. But, I mean, £15 million is a lot of money. So I think that's part of the reason why there's such a big argument over it as well.
Yeah. Rod, what's your take on that, mate?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? It's, you know, yeah, it's a difficult one. Obviously,
Nantes should get some kind of payment because, you know, they're out of player. But should Cardiff have to play Ashton at all? It should be insured in some way, but it's just a sad story all the way around, to be honest.
Mm. Dee, do you think there's more to come out of this whole situation? Because we're hearing little things about the plane not being fit for purpose and all these other little stories here and there. Obviously, it's hearsay because we don't know too much about it. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some day there's going to be more information going to come out about it. I think I'm not some conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but I do think that there's more to it than what actually happened. But as Adrian said earlier, some sort of deal was taking place. So though the player never actually got to put the shirt on for the club and run into the pitch for them, some sort of money still does have to be paid. So that seems feasible because that would only be, what, a third of the fee that they would be paying. But that's the whole reason that he was meant to be going there, because in a plane, because of the fact that he was going to go and sign for the club. But it's just tragic circumstances what happens. It's really sad. And the funny thing is that when you look at there's nothing funny about it, actually. Sorry, that's not the word to use. I'll say the ironic thing about it is that when you look at the results that... sorry, excuse me. Right, when you look at the results that Cardiff had last season and the refereeing decisions that went against them, it could have been him because he's a target man, good in the air, Salah, etc. A couple goals from him could have been the difference to what could have kept them up, and we will actually never know now. So there's so many things surrounding the story, financially, what could happen on the pitch, etc., that it's a bitter one, a bitter pill to swallow for his family and any supporter, to a lesser extent, supporters of Cardiff Football Club, wondering what might have been.
Yeah, I think you just hit the nail right on the head there when you mentioned this family. I mean, they're obviously still grieving, and this has rambled on for too much. As I said before, it seems that a price has just been put on his life, and that's it.
Exactly. You
know? I just hope that the family are looked after by both clubs, and they can get on with their lives, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Moving on to Serie A, and Alexis Sanchez scored in Inter's 3-1 win at Sampdoria, but received his marching orders after picking up a second yellow for simulation. Rod, we spoke about Lukaku the other week, and he's obviously started life at Inter very well. Sanchez looks like he's on the same track. Is this a bigger season for Sanchez or Lukaku, do you think?
Oh, I'd say for Sanchez. I think we all know what Lukaku can do. He'll get you goals. It's just the rest that's not so good with him. But yeah, I think Sanchez, you know, from when he come to United from Arsenal, he was just a complete different player. He was like the Torres Liverpool to Chelsea. He was like, they're just totally different players. And obviously he's got a goal, but obviously he's been sent off, which was pretty unlucky because he didn't look like he was going for the penalty because he jumped straight back up. But yeah, I think Sanchez, to answer your question.
Okay, great. Now, over in La Liga, and Barca's 2-0 win at Getafe moves them within 2 points of leaders Real Madrid, who drew 0-0 at Atleti. Suarez gave Barca the lead, but it was Ter Stegen's interception and clearance that led to the opening goal that caught my eye. As far as the evolution of goalkeepers go, is he the best in the world at the moment?
In regards to, I think the best goalkeeper, never had the greatest season last season. I think the best goalkeeper in the world is actually Yana Black. Oblak at Leti. But in terms of, as we were speaking about earlier with Pickford, this whole sweeper keeper thing, Ter Stegen is the best, because Ter Stegen is one of, if not the best keeper in the world. And he's brilliant with his feet. Knew this from back when he was in Germany, how good he is with his feet. And that fits into the Barca style, about the Barcelona culture, because they want to pass the ball around. Victor Valdez was obviously very good at it, and he was their goalkeeper for numerous years, came through La Masia. But that pass for the goal was just sublime out from the back. And obviously, the likes of Alisson, Henderson, they have the quality to do that. Jordan Pickford wishes he had that quality, but he doesn't as much as self-confidence as he has. So, but yeah, just some blind passing. If a goalkeeper can do that for you, imagine you've got a game, it's a tight 0-0, you're getting no creativity from your outfield players, and your goalkeeper could do that and then you score a goal. But don't get twisted, as good as Stegen's pass was, there was still a lot to do for Suarez. It was a brilliant finish to be able to lob the goalkeeper. But yeah, in terms of the whole sweeper keeper thing, Stegen is the best.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I don't know if you heard what Uli Hoeneß said the other day about Bayern Munich banning players from playing for the national team if Ter Stegen is called up instead of Manuel Neuer, or selected instead of Manuel Neuer. I mean, this is the guy that did, what, half a sentence for a tax fraud. Is he just saying anything just to be relevant?
Possibly. I mean, it's a ridiculous idea. You're going to ban your club players from representing their country. I'm sure they'd have something to say about that. I mean, Ter Stegen is a better goalkeeper than Neuer. I've never been a big fan of Manuel Neuer, ever. I've always thought he gets himself in so many unnecessary situations that when he makes a mistake, I actually just laugh, because more often than not, it's self-inflicted. It's, you know, it's him running out of his box unnecessarily, or, you know, being on the ball outside of his box. And as I said, getting involved in situations he doesn't need to be in. Obviously, now he's had a couple of injuries. I think in one season, he was pretty much out, you know, a couple of seasons, he was out for the whole season and just came back and played four games and then got in the Germany squad for a major tournament, things like that. He's obviously had a period of time in terms of the national team where he's not had a genuine rival. And I think now Ter Stegen is performing at the level he is. For Barcelona, there is now a genuine rival for Neuer. So when he's making those mistakes, there is somebody breathing down his neck who is not only playing well but also feels that himself. So I think Ter Stegen himself has also been talking up himself and his chances and his right to be Germany's goalkeeper. So I mean, going back to Uli Hoeneß, good luck with him trying that one. I'm not sure that's going to work out very well for Bayern, for Germany, or all those players who he's thinking they can ban from playing for the national team if he ever tried to pull that one off. And just to go, you know, talking about best goalkeepers in the world, I agree with Dee. It's Jan Oblak for me. Ter Stegen's pass, great contribution. He's good with his feet, but I also think Edison's the best with his feet as well. You know, if you compare all goalkeepers across the world, Edison is basically an outfield player, isn't he? He's ridiculous in some ways how comfortable he's on the ball, and obviously his ability to literally just smash the ball long, put it on a sixpence, it's incredible to watch. It's a shame, actually, when you're watching a City game sometimes the directors don't realise how good he is on the ball, and you actually want to see his contributions to the game because he's so good at it, but sometimes they're cutting away and looking at other things and they miss a trick there, I think.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be the first time there's a bit of needle between Germany goalkeepers, because I know Ter Stegen and Manuel Neuer had a bit of a war of words a couple of weeks ago. I think Neuer said that Ter Stegen isn't as committed to the German national team, and Ter Stegen said, well, those comments were inappropriate. Cast your mind back to the Oliver Kahn, Jens Lehmann era. They hated each other, didn't they?
Two big personalities that you mentioned there, so... You know, again, two guys who are not afraid to stick their chests out and to big themselves up effectively. You know, huge confidence from both of them and great careers. So, you know, it's no surprise that those two did and said some of the things they did in terms of talking about themselves and bigging themselves up.
There you go. Right, before we wrap up the show, gents, I'm going to enlighten you with Eurotrash.
And now it's time for Eurotrash.
Now, I don't know if Adrian has been on the show since we introduced Eurotrash, but just for his peace of mind, I've found three stories from around Europe. Which actually, there's one from Australia, funny enough, so I should really call it World Trash. But I'm going to read out these three stories, and you guys need to decide which is the best of the worst. Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. And now it's time for Eurotrash.
What? You still there?
Yeah, go on, mate.
I thought that United game really put you to sleep. Right, story one. Now, something quite remarkable happened in the Netherlands a few days ago. The owner of Roda JC was booted out of the stadium by his own fans. Maurizio Garcia de la Vega took over the club in 2018, but has been blamed for the club's current plight. Fans placed banners during the game against the Grafschap, which read, "Fraud, Maurizio out, faker, liar, and Maurizio, fuck yourself, hijo de puta," which means son of a bitch. At halftime, a set of supporters stormed the director's box and ushered him out of the ground. Now, what made it even funnier was Roda's security flat out refused to do anything about it. In fact, one bloke just shook his head and kept saying no. So that's the first one. Now, the next story comes from the Championship, which I'm sure everyone knows about. Richard Keogh's career could be over as a result of a car crash involving teammates Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence. Much has been written about the incident on social, and both Lawrence and Bennett have been charged with drunk driving. We don't know what's going to happen, but all we know is that Richard Keogh, his knee is fucked. That's all we know. And the players were under the influence of certain things, which we can't go into because we don't know the full details. Yeah. Story number three comes from Australia, where a soccer mum committed thousands of dollars worth of fraud and forgery offences and is facing deportation after being jailed. New Zealand citizen Hunter Louise Lahuli, don't even know how to pronounce her name, anyway, she admitted to 19 dishonesty offences over a five-month period in 2018, including hiring a hotel during a football tournament and failing to pay for them. She also used Gumtree to fraudulently accept $11,380 worth of rent and bond for a room at a home she wasn't even authorised to lease. Now, in total, the court heard that she netted, get this, $127,000.25 worth of goods, services and money, which she told police was used to impress women in her son's football club and pay school fees and rent. There you go. So, gentlemen, best of the worst. Double D.
I have to go with... I'm not going to say PC, so I'm going to have to go with the car. Any of those would have been worthy winners, so I'm going to have to go with the whole Derby incident, man.
Yes.
Terrible. Just absolutely terrible. Should know better being footballers driving under the influence. Kids for Keogh to come out with the worst injuries and he wasn't even driving, it's just even more of a mess. I'm going to have to go with that, but they actually could be worthy winners this week. All madness this week.
Yeah. Well, word on the street is that Keogh was asking Derby to put out a press release saying that he injured himself in training. Yeah, good luck with that. Rod, what's your take on that? What's your choice?
Yeah, this is a difficult one because I actually watched the video to this, the guy getting ushered out, and it was literally scary. Even the police just didn't even get involved. It was so funny. He was just like, you get out of your own club now. And I've seen this guy that you said, he was like, he's here, but he said, like, no. But yeah, this Derby one is, this Richard Keogh is an idiot. You know, but being a club captain, experienced bloke. Oh, yeah, just... and his knee looked... Yeah, I don't think he'll play again, to be honest. But, yeah, I'd have to go with that one. Even though the one in Holland was bizarre. This is a tough one this week. But, yeah, that Derby one. Absolute morons.
Joe, what I love most about that, the one in Holland, the owner's got his hands in the air like he's about to be shot.
And it, just... looks like a mob has literally... kidnapped him and said, "You're going, mate." Ushering him out. He looks scared to death.
The ironic thing is that he's Mexican. He's probably part of a cartel or something. He's never been scared in his life.
Yeah, but them Dutch are crazy.
Yeah. Got some stories about those. Aid, what's your pick, my friend?
Yeah, I covered a little bit of the Derby story as well over the weekend, so I'm going to go Derby. Crazy, crazy story. Crazy night it would have been for those players. Sort of day and then night, Tuesday, and the way it ended, it's just sort of thing you just don't hear about every day, every year, you know, even sort of over a period of time. And it's obviously nowhere near the end with the charges and stuff, the drink-drive charges for Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence. Implications for Keogh, as has been said, probably won't play again, or there's a good chance he might not play again. Stories coming out today saying he's going to be out for 15 months, and he's 34 in the summer. By the time he's due to be fit again, 15 months, December 2020, he's going to have 6 months left of his contract and be 34. you know, after doing, I think he's done both ligaments in his knee, so you know, how long is it going to take for him to get back to any sort of condition to play first team football, to present a future club. You know, if Ireland gets a Euro 2020, he's going to miss that. It's just, you know, this court case, I've been saying to people, when this court case happens and the full details of this come out, I think there could be some serious sort of implications for those guys involved. Obviously a ridiculous thing to do, get in a car when you've been driving, and it's just a mess. The whole thing is just a mess. So by far the worst story last week.
Have there been any developments, do you know? Because I've seen an image, and I don't know how much we can read into this, but I've seen an image, and there looks like a little disregarded bag outside the motor, which could be anything, but looking at it, it isn't a sugar. I can tell you that for now.
I think the safest thing to say, time will tell. And all will come out in court. All of us with WhatsApp, I'm sure, have received numerous bits and pieces over the last week, claiming to be conversations had by people who were aware of what happened that night, pictures relating to that night. And I just think it's so hard nowadays to even know what's true and what's not, the way things are passed around on social media and stuff like that. I think the best thing, the safe thing to do is just to wait and see. And everything
will
all come out in the wash, as they say.
Yeah. The thing is that
if they'd been breath tested, would have definitely been drug tested. So it'll all come out, and pretty much sure the way the police deal with stuff and how big it was, if there was drugs involved, I'm pretty sure they would have come out by now, because the police do speak to reporters and do sell stories to the press. I know that for a fact. So,
you have to wait and see
what happens.
Yeah.
The problem, Rodri, is even if the press do know, now they've been charged as this sort of legal sort of restrictions that newspapers and journalists are under, which means there's only certain things that they can report. So that's why I said, you know, we'll have to almost wait and see what comes out in court, because that is, one of a better phrase,
this
open season, anything
that's sitting. Yeah, like I say, if they have been drug tested, then they'll definitely come out.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Don, a side note, how much has the Leveson inquiry affected the journalists?
In what sense?
Well, I mean, you know, you said there's only certain things that you guys can print. Has the actual whole inquiry affected you guys?
That's a sort of media law thing. That comes with court cases, the restrictions I'm talking about there. I'm just trying to think. I've got to go back to my journalism studies now.
You're flicking through the books, yeah. I can hear you.
Yeah. The pages down in the background, that's them now, it's my textbook. No, seriously, that's it's just what it is, just legal restrictions that are related to covering court cases and cases that involve police and arrests and things. As soon as somebody's arrested, basically proceedings are deemed to be active, and then you can't effectively write things that may prejudice the case. In simple terms, anything that could now be in the papers could be seen by somebody who's going to be on a jury or whatever, or going to be a judge. So therefore, we have a responsibility to not write things that may influence their decision. So that's why, for example, if a journalist is aware, as what she rightly says, somebody may well have been tipped off by a police friend of theirs on the charge there's drugs offences as well, but you can't report that, because anyone who, as I said, who may be on a jury or the judge, they will see that, and then when they're coming to preside over the case, they will swat and go, "Oh, I read that in the Daily Mail." So it influences, you know, their thinking. So we have to be careful in those cases, so we're not held in contempt of court.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years back for the whole Andy Johnson thing. Andrew Johnson. Someone associated with the show was actually putting out tweets about Andrew Johnson, and I received a tweet or a direct message from someone saying, "Do you realise that what he's doing is illegal?" I'm like, "Well, that's him. It's got nothing to do with me," kind of thing. So, I see where you're coming from. But you know, the funny thing is, when the story first broke, I put out a tweet saying, you know, Wayne Rooney is already starting to influence the players at the club, and he hasn't even arrived yet. But I didn't realise how the severity of it all. So I was like, I'll keep it there, and fuck it, doesn't matter. I don't think Wayne Rooney cares about my tweets too much. But anyway. Right, gentlemen, that's it for tonight. Thank you ever so much for your time. Before I let you guys go, Twitter handles, Mr. Giggs.
Rod James Giggs.
Thank you. D. He's gone. At double D, I think. Is it? Are you still there?
He's on mute. He's on mute.
At Double D, D&D right, for your factory on Top FM every Saturday.
Goodness me, at Double D, DUBULDW.
He was saying that loads of times and he didn't realise
I'm using it. It's at Double D, for fuck's sake, can't you hear me?
Why can't you hear me?
Lovely. And it's the D&D for your factory on Top FM every Saturday morning between 10 and 12.
Hey, look at Stowe. Hey, shooting the first, the best podcasts in the world. Shooting the defense.
Best podcast in the world. There you go. Adrian.
I am at Adrian J. Kajumba. So that's at Adrian and just the letter J. And Kajumba is spelled K A J U M B A.
Fantastic. Well, that's it for us this week, guys. Feel free to give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot Defense. And one more thing before I go. Quick shout out to Tap In Football. They had Ollie Holt on recently. And I know these guys have started they're quite fresh in the podcast game. And they've got a fantastic show. And for them to get that gentleman on is a good grab for him. So well done, gentlemen. Long may it continue. So until next time, adios.